Welcome to Risky Business News, a short podcast dedicated to the most important cybersecurity news. This is Catherine Campano, and today's show is brought to you by application allow listing software maker Airlock Digital. We'll start right off the bat with some pretty big news that the leader of a major BEC gang was arrested this week. The arrest was orchestrated by Interpol and Nigerian police, both of which received help from security firms Group IB and Palo Alto Networks. To learn more about the arrest, we asked Jen Miller Osborne, Deputy Director of Threat Intelligence at Unit 42 at Palo Alto Networks, to walk us through what happened.
This week, Interpol and the Nigerian police force announced the arrest of a prominent Nigerian business email compromise, or BEC, actor as part of a joint operation dubbed Operation Delilah. Palo Alto Networks Unit 42, my team, has classified this actor as part of Silver Terrier, a network known for business email compromise scams which have harmed thousands of companies globally. We named Silver Terrier back in 2016 when we identified 100 Nigerian actors using commodity malware for BEC schemes. This marked a significant and rapid shift of the mindset of Nigerian print schemes, highlighting that these actors were growing in sophistication. Now, we're tracking more than 500 actors tied to Silver Terrier. This particular actor, we have been tracking him since 2017, but have found his malicious online activities actually date back to 2015. He had more than 240 domains registered using his aliases. Of those, over 50 were used to provide command and control for malware. What's interesting about this week's arrest news, the actor actually fled the country in 2021 before he could be arrested. But with the intelligence and collaboration from partners involved in this operation, law enforcement was able to capture the actor when he returned to Nigeria. This news is on the heels of a previous announcement of Operation Falcon 2, which announced the arrests of 11 BEC actors earlier this year in January. Unit 42 is credited for helping Interpol with the arrest of 6 of those actors. We've been working with Interpol since 2017. We were the first cybersecurity company to sign a data exchange agreement with the goal to combat cyber threats and cybercrime globally by sharing threat information generated by Palo Alto Networks and Unit 42. In these operations, we typically help law enforcement by providing telemetry, malware analysis, and forensic support. I'm a huge proponent of public-private collaboration and threat intelligence sharing because it can make real impacts just like the result of this operation with the bad guys behind bars. The more organizations that also typically compete that can come together and share threat intelligence, we can make a major impact.
Moving on to other news, we also learned this week that the US FTC has fined Twitter $150 million for using phone numbers collected through its 2FA account security process for advertising purposes. In total, the FTC said the phone numbers of more than 140 million Twitter users were abused this way. The FTC said that Twitter's actions violated a 2011 FTC order that explicitly prohibited the company from misrepresenting its privacy and security practices. This week, we also learned that the US tried to push a new set of sanctions through the UN against North Korea, including a package that would freeze assets owned by the Lazarus hacking group. Despite the heavy US push, both China and Russia have signaled their intention to use their veto option to negate the vote on the grounds that the additional sanctions would just worsen the existing humanitarian crisis. In a related political story, Reuters reported on Thursday that Russian state-sponsored hackers were behind the recently launched website named Very English Kudera. The website leaked emails of several pro-Brexit hardliners earlier this month. This included emails from ex-MI6 boss Richard Dearlove, leading Brexit campaigner Gisela Stewart, and pro-Brexit historian Robert Runes. Several of the victims confirmed the hack, and Shane Huntley, director of the Google Threat Analysis Group, said there were clear technical links between the website and the Russian hacking group the company was calling Cold River. Multiple security experts said this week the entire affair and the website smelled like Guccifer 2.0 and DC Leaks, two other politically charged leaks orchestrated by Russian intelligence. Moving on to hacks and breaches, Indian low-cost airline SpiceJet said it was hit by a ransomware attack on Wednesday. The company initially said that some flights were being delayed, but as the day advanced, some flights were also cancelled because of the attack. In the US, Motherboard reported that Verizon got hacked again. The news outlet reported on Thursday that a hacker had obtained access to a database that includes the full name, email addresses, corporate ID numbers, and phone numbers of hundreds of Verizon employees. Motherboard said the threat actor got their hands on the data after tricking a Verizon employee into giving them remote access to their computer. In news related to an older data breach, we also learned this week that the data of more than 142 million guests who stayed at MGM hotels in the past was released for free on a Telegram channel. The data originates from a 2019 security breach, which came to light in early 2020 after a data broker began advertising the data on a cybercrime forum. Initially, only a small sample of 10 million records was leaked in the public, and this marks the first time the full data set is broadly available. We also had a report this week from the security team at Safety Detectives, who said they found an Elasticsearch server leaking the personal details of more than 10 million Russians, Ukrainians, and Kazakhs who applied for microloans. The team wasn't able to identify the server owner, but said the server contained details such as full names, dates of birth, home addresses, and even passport details. We also have some cool research from a team of academics from Carnegie Mellon University. The researchers said they developed an app named Lumos that can run on both laptops and smartphones and which uses augmented reality to show any hidden cameras or microphones inside a room. The CMU team said they tested 44 different IoT devices of various types, brands, and models across 6 different environments and achieved a 95% detection rate. The researchers plan to present more details about their app and their project at the upcoming Usenix Security Conference later this summer. Also in tech news, this week, hardware security firm Eclipsium said that the old pants-down vulnerabilities are still around and impact BMC boards manufactured by Quanta Cloud. Risky Business News has asked John Lucadis, VP of Technology at Eclipsium, to provide more details and explain how these vulnerabilities could be weaponized.
Back in 2019, multiple CVEs, commonly referred to as pants down, were released in the BMC, or Baseboard Management Controller, based on ASPEED chipsets. This chipset is often used in servers as part of an out-of-band management interface that you can use to deal with any sort of problems with your server, turn it on and off, and fix it even if the operating system is no longer responding. Now, the problem was that these CVEs would allow the debug interfaces to the BMC to be left open so that software on the host could modify memory and take over execution on the BMC. Now, over 3 years later, cloud servers are still vulnerable to this attack. The impact would be to enable malware that is persistent and stealthy, that is introduced from the out-of-band management interface into your host server. That could also brick the server, causing significant disruption for an organization. Now, why does this happen? This happens because firmware is the hidden attack surface of every device. It's something that was designed to be forgotten, but it is included into each server, in this case, with different code for each of the instances. And therefore, every code base needs to be tested independently. And manufacturers may or may not propagate the fixes or advisories for these issues. Therefore, there is a very little adoption of firmware-based updates.
In other vulnerability-related news, a Turkey-based security researcher has come forward and taken credit for the hijacking of 2 very popular Python and PHP libraries in an incident widely reported earlier this week. In a blog post on Medium, Yunus Aydin said he was only conducting security research when he hijacked the CTX and PHP Pass libraries earlier this month. Aydin said he never meant any harm, and despite collecting a trove of sensitive environment variables such as AVS access keys, he said he has since deleted the collected information. Now moving on to malware and threat intelligence news. Akamai published a report this week about a new cybercrime group using the name of the Rebel Ransomware Gang to extort companies with threats of DDoS attacks. Akamai said this group has already launched some DDoS attacks, but this campaign overall is far smaller than previous DDoS extortion campaigns carried out by groups using the Rebel name in previous months. Also this week, the administrators of the Versus Dark Web Marketplace have announced plans to shut down their operations. The administrators announced this decision after a hacker published last week details about a vulnerability in its servers that could be used to access its internal database and obtain details about its users. In terms of new attacks, Risky Business News learned that threat actors are currently exploiting a vulnerability tracked as CVE-2022-24706 to take over Apache CouchDB servers. These are new attacks, and the vulnerability can be exploited by using a cookie with the value monster sent over port 5984. This allows a threat actor access to a CouchDB server's admin user left over from its default installation without needing to provide an additional password. This happens if the server owner has not removed that user or has not put the database behind a firewall. There are currently more than 81,000 CouchDB servers exposed online, although it's unclear how many of these still run their default installs. Also this week, the NCC group reported a surge in activity from the Clop ransomware gang, with the group listing 21 new victims on its leak site over the past month. Prior to this, the gang had greatly reduced its operations after several of its members were detained in Ukraine in June 2021. As for technical reports published over the past few days, we actually have quite a few interesting ones. The first is from Red Canary, which published an analysis of Chrome Loader, a browser hijacker that modifies browser settings to redirect user traffic to advertising websites. We also have a report from Trend Micro on CheerScript, a new strain of Linux ransomware that can be used to encrypt data on VMware ESXi servers. IBM X-Force also published a report on BlackBasta, the ransomware strain that was used against AGCO, the US agricultural giant. In addition, TrustWave also published a report on Grandeiro, a banking Trojan typically used to target banks in Latin America. And last but not least, Trend Micro also published a report on Earthper Baroka, a suspected Chinese APT that has spent the past few years targeting online gambling websites catering to Chinese-speaking users. This concludes the bulk of today's news. However, one last item remains, and for its sponsor slot today, Airlock Digital co-founder Daniel Schell wanted to discuss the recent major news that Microsoft will be forcibly enabling default security settings for all its Azure AD customers next month.
So in 2019, Microsoft implemented new default security baselines for newly created directories. And what they're doing now is going retrospectively back to maybe organizations that created their policies before 2019 and applying the new security defaults, which involves primarily forcing multi-factor authentication at logon. So this is going to be a pretty significant security uplift for smaller organizations who, you know, might not have security staff or even IT admins on hand, who will suddenly be getting enrolled into multi-factor, which, you know, is a really effective control and, you know, really necessary in today's online world. So what's going to happen is in June, global admins will start receiving prompts during their authentication, asking them to enable the security defaults, but letting them know regardless the security baseline will be implemented within 14 days. After that period, all users will be asked to enroll into multi-factor at sign-in and have a grace period of 14 days to actually enroll. Microsoft say that this change is going to affect over 60 million user accounts, so this is a significant uplift for those organizations. Organizations are able to manually opt out of these changes, but I think you'd want to have a pretty good reason not to have this change implemented.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all reports in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com or on our website at risky.biz.